You see, one of the things that people don't understand is that the flak that the Germans put up were these 88 millimeter shells, and then they also had the 105s. They would shoot up at our formations. For a while, they tried shooting directly at us, but that didn't seem to do what they did later on. At the end of the war, you see, the Germans kept bringing their guns back toward Berlin all the time as our troops kept going east on the ground. The Germans moved the guns back. Well, it concentrated the gun until, instead of having 15 or 20 guns around something, they might have had 200 or 300 guns. And man, tell you, when you'd see these red flashes outside your window, that's getting pretty close. And then you'd hear all this stuff that you'd hit as it would go through the airplane. And I would always, when I got in those positions, I always seemed to get into a little ball and get over next to the side of the plane as if it would help me. Ooh-wee. That was really awful. That was scary time. And one of the worst things I think I did, had no choice. One of the young lieutenant colonel, was leading, and I was flying in a hole, and he blew up. And we had no choice, and we went right through him, all the debris and everything. No telling what we hit. But that was a bad time. I still wake up about that. I shouldn't talk about it.
And that mission was different than the other two you talked about. This is a completely different close call, right?
Oh, yeah.
From the other two. This is another one.
Yeah, I had 24 good calls. Oh, my Cuffy used to just give us fit. He was really good. And then when the war was over, the night that the English put out the word that the Germany had signed off some of the guys that had been there for 4 years or 5 years, went out and took a 500-pound bomb and put it out in the middle of the field and blew it up out there. And man alive, it put a hole in the ground out there. That was something that scared us all half to death. We thought that the Germans were coming back. Oh, it was done right on the base. They just took a bomb and rolled it out there on the cart, and then put a timer on it, and everybody got away, and it blew up. And then when the war was over, what do you do with all those bombers? And what do you do with all the personnel? You just can't keep them on base all the time. You just can't let them go run all around over London all the time. There were no good maps of northern Norway and Sweden up in that area, way north, almost not to the pole, but way up in there. And so they decided they would photograph these countries. And so that's what I did. We take cut down crew, the navigator, co-pilot, engineer, radio man, oh, and the photographer. Had a K5 camera. It's a big box. The thing must be 4 feet by 4 feet square. And it had huge rolls of film in it. And we would fly at 20,000 feet. Exactly, had to be just as level as we could do. Had to be a nice day. Had to stay right on the headings, best you could stay on the headings, every 30 seconds, otherwise it would take a picture. And that's what I did. I'd sit there and just fly just as level as I could fly it that way. And it was really nice. The days that they picked the real good days. That was in the springtime, see, right at the end of the war. Nobody to bother you. You didn't have to worry about flak. You didn't have to worry about anything. You just flew the airplane. And that was really great. And I've always said I just loved to fly until they started shooting, and then it wasn't worth a nickel. So then we'd bring these back. We'd fly all day long, probably 6 or 8 hours. Bring back then these films. Of course, now they use the satellites But at that time, this was the best napping you could do. That was fun time. Go, when we got home, we could go to London. Some of the other guys went over everything. All of Germany, all those countries in there were all, everybody had to have something to do, and this was a wonderful thing to do. They had maps there, and they saw things they'd never seen before. So then there was another thing started up. I don't know who started it. It wasn't just our base. It wasn't our group. But there were probably, probably all of them. I don't know. But they called it the Tour of the Ruhr Valley. And there are all these people that worked on the flight lines. All the people who took care of pulling the bombs and all that kind of thing. Hanging the bombs in there. Sweated all night long, drilling holes and fixing the airplanes. And we boarded up the bomb bays, put boards in the bomb bays. And we would take 35 guys, put them in there, and we'd have a strip crew. Then we'd fly down in the Ruhr Valley. We'd go across English Channel, and we never got much over 500 feet, maybe 1,000 feet. So you're right down on the tops of everything. And it would set the speed about 150, and I never worried about any radio towers or anything like that because they were all torn up. Everything you saw was completely demolished. Terrible. We used the airplanes as a bus to take them and show them.
Like a sightseeing tour.
Yeah, that's what it was. Tour of the Ruhr. That's what they called it.
How long did you do this?
I think they were about 4.5 hours, maybe 5 hours. The Ruhr wasn't too far away from, you had to go across France. I expect I made 15 trips. And of course that means that there were a bunch of other guys doing the same thing. We never saw each other.
With 35 guys in each one of them too. So there was a lot of guys you were taking on these trips.
Everybody wanted to go. Anybody, Colonel says, free go. If you wanted to get away from what you're doing, this is what you did.
Well, and many of these guys would have never, they would never seen any of this, never.
No.
Because they weren't, just because they worked on the planes doesn't mean they were ever up in them.
That's right. I'm trying to find Tour of the Ruhr here. Can't find it. Here it is. Now this is the Tour of the Ruhr. These are prisoners of war camp. Just look at the thousands of tents there. And this is Munster down. Look at that town. It's just desolate. There's nothing. Here's Remagen Bridge, which was really some battle during the war. Here's Aachen. There's just nothing but debris. Just look at the... There's not a place there that's worth anything. That was the Tour of the Ruhr. Here's where, this is number 2 engine here.
Mm-hmm.
That's number 1 out there. So you can see how close you were. I was sitting right here.
No, yeah, we're just looking at some pictures right now. I just wanted to ask you about the name of your bomber.
The name of it was Organized Confusion. And Cuffy Wade, he was an English major and he was going to go into the newspaper business. He thought he would want to be a reporter down in Lawton, Oklahoma. And so they were sitting around in Sioux City, Iowa. We flew up there one night. He wanted to know what we should name the bomber. John and I just sat over to the side and didn't say anything, let them have at it. They decided on Organized Confusion. They just said, this is Organized Confusion. We're all confused, but we're organized. And I think that's real good.
Now, the B-17s also had the nickname, the Flying Fortress.
Flying Fortress. That's right. The first one that came out, 1933, and some reporter was there, and they had all these guns sticking out of it, and he said, "Why, that looks like a fortress," and that's where the name came from.
Now, you logged approximately, was it 1,200 hours?
About 1,200 hours of combat flying, but that was co-pilot and pilot. John and I split the time. That's what everybody did when he was flying with me. And when he was lead pilot, I was the work pilot on several missions.